You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702.
Series Edition.
We join Emma Sadlier this afternoon. She is a digital law expert and the founder of the Digital Law Company. She's also the author of two books that I think really encapsulate parts of today's conversation. Don't Film Yourself Having Sex was the first book, and Other Legal Advice. And then the second book was titled Selfies, Sexting and Smartphones, A Teenager's Online Survival Guide. Because today we're talking about sexting as part of our series on the social conundrum. This is where we look at the good, the dangerous, and the ever-changing impact of social media on human beings, you know, on our brains and how we feel, how we end up interacting, and overall on society, and how all of this intersects with the law. Emma, good afternoon. Do we have Emma Abel? Emma, are you there?
Hello.
Yes.
Good afternoon.
Good to have you on. I was just saying that the two books that you've written really are going to encapsulate what we are talking about today. Is it fair to say, and I'm seeing this as well come into the fray all the time around phones, around social media, that sexting has become an ever-increasing form of how we engage, how we get to know the other person?
Absolutely. And, you know, there are a lot of people in the field who recommend it. I'm thinking about Dr. Eve, who wrote in her book Cyber Infidelity, that we should be encouraging sexting, that it's something that's very good for relationships and that it kind of keeps the spice alive. And you know, I understand that there can be benefits, especially kind of with lockdown and people living every aspect of their lives remotely, meeting online, not necessarily being able to meet face-to-face, and then sort of taking their relationship to the next level remotely. I can tell you that it's sort of just another base, as it were, when it comes to the kids. And I've often been called a victim blamer when I've written books like Don't Film Yourself Having Sex, or I tell people not to take naked pictures. But I can tell you it's just one of those areas where prevention is better than cure.
Mm.
Once that content exists, then it's out of your control. And the mantra that I'm teaching is that digital content is dangerous content, and never more so than when it comes to naked pictures.
Yes, you know, there's a TV show called Gomorrah, and the young girl in the TV show gets into a relationship with a boy, and they really like each other and so on. And she gets the idea to send him some sexy pictures, nudes in this case. And she sends the nudes, and of course it goes viral. Her school gets the pictures, and it just goes horribly wrong to the point where she attempts suicide. But there's a point where her mother is shouting at her and says, how stupid could you be? How
yeah.
could you be so dumb that you sent naked pictures of yourself with your face in it?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a very important point.
Yeah.
You know, and as much as I get called a victim blame, I really do wish that we could live in a world where we could all sex safely. But it's often an extension of gender-based violence. And what we're calling it actually is image-based violence.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, often there are victims of where people have sent the naked pictures themselves. But more and more, Azra, I'm dealing with cases where somebody takes a picture of your face, for example, from your Instagram account or your WhatsApp profile picture, or even your LinkedIn profile picture, uses this incredible technology that's available these days, photoshops your face onto a naked picture or a naked body, and then circulates that purporting to be you. And that's equally harmful. So the kind of message that I give is, if you can't resist the temptation to get involved in sexting, then there are a few rules I think you should follow. The first is, make sure you can't be identified from the content. Now, we know from some high-profile cases like the Margaret Van Veek case, whose face wasn't in that picture,
yes.
that went so viral, that that's not a foolproof a cure, but I think it's a good step. So make sure your face is not in it. Make sure you've got birthmarks, tattoos, distinctive piercings, particularly distinctive bedroom or background makeup.
Tattoos. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a real thing. You know, I'm thinking of there was a high-profile case earlier this year where, you know, with the water polo coach from Cape Town, and her face wasn't in a lot of those pictures, but she had a very distinctive watch, which was in those pictures. And that was the sort of the common denominator between these pictures, which identified her. So the first rule is to make sure you can't be identified. The second rule is to make sure you're sending the content to the right person and not the wrong WhatsApp group. which sounds like I'm trying to be funny and referring to, you know, some of these high-profile cases which people have almost laughed about. But I'm actually thinking of this awful case that happened recently in Limpopo, where a guy sent a picture of his genitals ostensibly to his girlfriend, but accidentally sent it to his church WhatsApp group.
Oof.
And because of the shame, he actually committed suicide, the most horrific case. So really, if you're going to get involved in this quite risky behavior, then make sure that you're sober, that you're thinking clearly, carefully, you take your time, that you're not going to send the content to the wrong person. The third is to make sure that the person you're sending it to wants to receive it. Because, you know, if you start sending these kind of pictures to colleagues, you will be fired for sexual harassment. But also, I think where you receive that kind of content unsolicited, what I'm seeing a lot of people doing is taking screenshots of it and then publishing it on social media, you know, almost like you deserve it because you're going to be a sexual predator.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last is the most important, and make sure that you know the person, but not just know online like you've met online and you've been chatting every day, all day for months, and you feel like you're dating the person. Like, really know and trust as far as possible that person, because there is a sextortion ring operating in South Africa, and they're making a fortune. You know, so what their modus operandi is quite simple, as they find you online, sometimes, you know, on Tinder or Grindr, or sometimes even on Facebook, or sometimes even on LinkedIn. And they win your trust, and they tell you what they want you to, what you want to hear, and then they solicit pictures out of you. And as soon as you've sent them, and sometimes in months, as like 4 months, 8 months, I've spoken to clients who've been speaking to these people, so they have patience. And then as soon as they've got those naked pictures, they turn around and say, ha-ha, I'm not who you think I am.
Mm-hmm.
Send me 5,000 rand to my e-wallet, or I'm going to send this to whoever it might be. They've downloaded your friends list on Facebook. They'll put it on your company Facebook page, send it to your grandmother, your wife, if you have one, your 12-year-old son who I'm following on Instagram, that kind of thing.
Oh.
And then people panic and pay. And that's a very dangerous cycle. So
such
so
horrible people.
Terrible. And as if you have been a victim of that, then go to my website and have a look at a blog called The Sextortion Scam.
Yeah. Yeah,
where I've put all the tips there for people to follow if they have been a victim.
Yes, I saw that. So you say don't pay.
Don't pay.
Because
as soon as you start paying, they know you're a soft target and they don't stop asking.
Yes.
You know, I've had clients who've been paying literally for years and the requests just never stop. So block the person, take away their channel to you. I would say deactivate your social media accounts, which is something that all the social media platforms allow you to do.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to delete your account permanently. You just kind of go into hiding for a bit so that if these pictures are published, you can kind of limit the harm.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, it's just a filibuster. You know, in general, they don't actually publish the pictures. And the other thing I highly recommend you do is to put a Google alert on your name, which is something that all of us living in the digital age should do anyway. So,
mm-hmm.
So you Google your name and then you get an option at the bottom. It says create a Google search alert for this result. And what that means is that every time there's a new Google search result for your name, exactly an entry or a result, they will email you and you'll be able to know. So like even after this call, because this will be podcast,
mm-hmm.
I'll get an email saying, look, hey, Anna Sadler, there's a new Google search result for your name.
Amazing.
And just make sure that you're keeping an eye on your reputation online.
Yes. So Emma, just want to follow up before we talk about children and sexting, because that's also a big conversation, and sort of revenge porn and the law and how it pertains to that. The deep fakes, the fabricated naked images, what recourse, what can we do? Is it often hard to prove that it's not you, that they're not real? Because some of these fakes, whether it's a fake Twitter post, or, you know, whether it's even, we know they're even apps that make it look like you're a reporter on television, or that that's something that happened from a news channel. So there's lots of different tools to allow people to create what looks almost real, almost authentic. What recourse? How do we disprove this?
I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg when it comes to this deep fake epidemic. You know, I think that the potential for harm is so immense. You know, we see people who have, you know, there are apps you can download where you can create, you take a porn film, and then you can take a picture of a kid in your class and put their face on it.
Mm.
And then using all this new technology, you can even insert yourself into that video. I mean, it's just absolutely crazy what is possible. I think what might happen is that in the future, we'll get to the point where we won't believe anything we see. You know, kind of like my approach now with fake news is presume everything I receive is fake until I can prove it otherwise. But I think that we're going to have to start almost becoming skeptical of just about everything we see online.
Yes, I think that's a good approach. I remember a few years ago, in fact, Barack Obama, there was a speech that was doctored. So they made it seem as if he said some really, not inflammatory, but, you know, some problematic things. But it wasn't a real speech. It was one of these fakes that was put out there. So this can affect relations even at a national societal level, not just at an individual level. So as you say, this is something that we're on the tip of the iceberg on. So,
but then I think what is very important as that, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it is important, is that we're very careful about who has access to our image. You know, with the kids and the Instagram accounts and the popularity contest, they let unsavory people into their networks, or even worse, is they have public accounts. And I think we've got to start getting kids to understand how dangerous image-based violence is. The idea that any strange person can just come onto your Instagram account and use all your pictures for these dodgy purposes.
Yeah.
So that for me is a really important one. I was dealing with a client a couple of weeks ago, a 14-year-old girl, where they'd taken her photo from Instagram, photoshopped her onto a naked body with these, you know, boobs and all showing, and they sent it to her and they said, unless you send me more nudes, I'm going to put this everywhere. It was somebody in her class. And luckily, she had the wherewithal just to sort of laugh and say, that's so obviously fake, get over it. Mm-hmm. But actually, I looked at that picture, and it looked pretty damn genuine to me. So I think we've got to be very careful about who has access to our image, because it's just so powerful. There's so much room for abuse these days.
Absolutely. So let's take a break, Emma. My guest is the founder and CEO of digital law company, Emma Sadlier, and we're talking about sexting today. You know, it's increasingly becoming a way of exchanging, of getting to know someone, of flirting, of courtship, you name it. Even once relationships are up and running, it's a way of, you know, keeping the fires burning. So what questions do you have? 011-883-0702, 31702 for your SMSs and your voice notes and WhatsApps on 072-702-1702.
702.
Series Edition.
It's 23 minutes past 2 and we're taking your calls and questions, and we're looking at sexting this afternoon, which is becoming ever more present. And that's part of the reason why President Cyril Ramaphosa ended up signing into law, in fact, the Film and Publications Amendment Act that made revenge porn illegal in South Africa. And it said that any person found guilty of sharing explicit images without the person's consent will face time behind bars or a hefty fine. And so have you shared information on explicit images? Because you probably didn't have the person's consent. Emma, what do you think of that, and how prevalent is it? I mean, lots of WhatsApp groups have this, things go viral, they keep moving and they keep moving, and we don't spare a thought or even pause to think about what we're doing and how it goes against the law.
Yeah, so I'm so thrilled about this new offense. I think it's absolutely delicious. The problem is it's not properly enforced yet. So as much as it was signed by President Ramaphosa late last year, we're waiting for regulations. And the regulations have been controversial because the rest of the Films and Publications Amendment Act does things like tries to regulate online content. So I've been saying since the beginning, even when I made submissions to Parliament about this, is that it's a great new offense, but it's in the wrong act. It shouldn't be in the Films and Publications Amendment Act. It should be in the Sexual Offences Act. Mm-hmm. Because revenge pornography, image-based violence, is a sexual offence. There is absolutely no question about it. Anyway, we've got to work with what we have. So what we have is this great new crime. As I say, it's not properly enforced yet, but it will be soon, I hope. And that basically says that if you send or show or distribute in any way private sexual photos or videos without the prior permission of the person in that photo or video, it's a criminal offense. And you said a hefty fine. I can tell you it's super hefty. It's a 300,000 rand fine.
Ooh.
And or 4 years in prison.
That
really should act as a deterrent. And your point about on sharing is very important, because it's not just the first baddie who sent that video or photo on without the consent of the person. It's every single person on those rugby locker room WhatsApp groups who shares it on. And I think we've just got to remind ourselves that there is a victim when you share that content. And sometimes it almost becomes like sport, you know, where you share these pictures of these high-profile cases that have gone viral. And it's like, oh, have you seen this one? Have you seen this one? Mm-hmm. Actually, each of those people could be prosecuted. And, you know, I think it's a lot of this probably great big social discussions we could have about the toxic masculinity with a lot of these sharings, or, you know, but the point is that it will cover not just adults, but children as well.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime somebody shares content, private sexual content of you without your consent, that's a criminal offense. So that is great. There are some concerns, you know, I think private should be sufficient. I don't think it should necessarily have to be sexual, because I'm thinking of some of the fat-shaming cases. Like I was dealing with one last week where a young woman had taken a before picture of a gym routine. Like she started a new gym program.
Yeah.
And she'd taken this picture, and it was clearly not sexual at all. You know, it was really a picture of her body, a totally unflattering, not a sexy picture at all, and it had been obtained by her ex-boyfriend, who was then circulating it. I don't think it should have to be sexual, but, you know, I think that it's better than nothing. I also think that direct intention is quite a high standard. I think when you're dealing with people's nudes, if you know you've got explicit, say you've got a sex tape of mine on your phone, I think you should be held to quite a high standard about whether or not, you know, that content lands up in the wrong hands.
Yes.
If you don't have a password on it and you leave it around on the table in a public place, then I think that should also be worthy of a prosecution.
Right.
It actually requires an intention.
So we've been hearing, of course, about people that the examples that you've been using are those that things have happened to. What about those that have done these things and the price that they've had to pay? Are we seeing prosecutions? Are we seeing identity? Mm. Is it easy to identify people who where the source is, where it all began? And are we seeing enough prosecution?
So with the deepfakes, that's very difficult, because we don't know often who it is, and trying to find out who's behind content can be difficult. It's something that you and I have discussed before.
Yeah.
But usually with these kind of cases, you know who you sent that naked picture to. So, you know who's at the beginning of the process of that content landing up in the wrong hands. So we normally do know who's behind the content. And as I say, we don't have this criminal offense yet, but we have seen a lot of people being found guilty for criminanuria, infringement of dignity. And we're starting to see, and this is for me very exciting, people bringing damages cases against the person who has circulated content. And I'm thinking of a friend of mine who's an advocate in Pretoria, just sent me very recently a judgment of a case he was involved in, where a guy using secret cameras filmed himself having sex with his girlfriend at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he put those on porn websites. And she sued successfully for over 750,000 rand in damages, and managed to do so anonymously as well, created sort of fake names and things for the court case.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a very encouraging trend. And where we start seeing big damages awards like that, it means that there are attorneys who will take it on contingency, which basically means that a victim who can't necessarily pay for legal fees could find a lawyer who would take it on and would only be paid if big damages were given awarded to the victim. So I think that's great. You know, I think that, and it's a difficult one, because often people who've been victims of image-based violence or revenge pornography are very ashamed and are nervous of taking legal action, because they don't want to add fuel to the fire. They don't want more people to find out about it. You know, my very first client, the worst thing that could have happened for her was that her grandmother found out about it, and we couldn't work out how to properly take action against this person without it becoming a big deal. And so she literally landed up changing her name, which is something that I'm afraid happens even with some of my teenage clients.
Wow.
They start going by a different name to escape what comes up when you Google them.
Yes. So, it's going as far as to change your name. Because as we know, the internet doesn't forget. We're out of time, Emma, but someone wants to know if someone gets hold of people's chats and shares them, is that also considered a criminal offense? 30 seconds.
Yes. Yes, it's an unlawful interception of data under the regulation of interception of communication. No, actually, it's under ECTA. So Section 86 of ECTA says that it's an unlawful interception of data. It's a criminal offense. But sometimes data can be intercepted and released if it shows you doing something illegal. It doesn't mean that the person who intercepted it can't be prosecuted, but there I'm thinking of the Gupta leak. The information released there was of such public value that their privacy kind of goes out the window, but that doesn't mean that the person who actually hacked the emails can't be prosecuted.
Okay. Well, till next week, Emma, thank you so much.
All the best, Azza. Thanks for talking about this important topic.
Absolutely. Emma Sadler, founder and CEO of the digital law company. We continue our series next week, and that was episode 3.